So this is Lindsay Poole. She's a health scientist within the Statistical Analysis and Reporting Branch of the Office of Extramural Research in the Office of the Director at the NIH. Her main role is providing data and analyses on NIH's research activities for strategic planning, policy support, budget development, and scientific workforce evaluation. She's a recent graduate of the Presidential Management Fellows Program and earned her MPH and MBA from Emory University.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you for attending the session. And I do want to point out that there are a couple seats in the front for you standers if your legs are getting tired. Again, my name is Lindsay Poole. I want to give a really quick shout out to my colleagues who are instrumental in preparing this analysis and this presentation, Susan Awad, Katrina Pearson, Robin Wagner, and Charles Wu, and they're all in the room. And so today I will be presenting on the methods for using publicly available statistical analysis and mapping tools to visualize NIH research projects. And this is primarily intended to be a methods type presentation. And we've got some handouts in the back, some SAS code. They'll also be available online, like they're supposed to be uploaded. But so if you want to take those and take them back to your office and try any of this stuff, please feel free to do so. No relationships to disclose. Okay, so just briefly, here's the outline for the presentation. Going to give you a little background about NIH, our motivations for the analysis, the tools we used, the data we used, our analysis results, and finally a couple lessons that we learned. Background about the NIH. Probably most of you in this room have heard of NIH. Our mission is to seek fundamental knowledge about the nature and behavior of living systems and apply that knowledge to enhance health, lengthen life, and reduce burdens of illness and disability. And tangential to that mission, NIH is committed to the continuous examination of our research projects to make sure we're really funding the best science. And then we strive to have a high level of accountability to our funders, which is the American public. We're the primary federal agency for supporting medical research, and this funding is distributed through 24 institutes and centers that have specific funding authority and different missions. Each year, we invest around $31 billion in medical research. 80% of that funding is awarded in what we call extramural funding, and that vocabulary is important because it's going to come up several more times. And then a smaller fraction of our budget goes to supporting our own projects and laboratories, and we call that intramural funding. And then my office, the Statistical Analysis and Reporting Branch within the Office of Extramural Research, is the primary NIH unit for providing agency-wide data and analysis on NIH's research activities and expenditures. And this is just one of the many analyses that we would do in any given year. And I want to say that we've included branch brochures in the back that you can pick up as well. Our customers are not only NIH internal. We do collaborate with members of the public in various communities, academic and otherwise. And we'd be happy to collaborate with you if you'd like to contact us at any point. So what was our motivation for this analysis? Well, there's been a big push in the federal government over the past few years to use scientific, statistical, and data visualization tools to increase our transparency, inform decisions about funding policies, look at the demographic characteristics of our grantees to make sure that we're funding people adequately, and to model funding patterns using interactive maps. That's where that GIS comes in. And then we were interested in learning and applying and sharing with you today some of these new visualization tools. And so today, the way we will do that is to demonstrate how publicly available NIH grant data can be mapped geographically using some of these tools. We use the SAS statistical software for data cleaning, geocoding, and conversion to extensible markup language, also known as XML. Many of you probably have SAS as part of your workplace software package, but R could be used as a good substitute, which is an open source alternative. The SAS Health zip code data set is part of Base SAS, and you can get that actually off the SAS website for free. And then we used WordPad to convert XML to KML. KML is keyhole markup language, and it's specific to geographic visualization, and it's also needed for Google Earth. So you do need to do that conversion. And then we used Google Earth for mapping, which probably most of you have heard of that. It's a free download that you can get and actually put on your desktop and use, slightly different than Google Maps. And to replicate this analysis, you probably would need to know a certain level of programming in SAS or whatever statistical programming tool you're using, and then you'd need to know a little bit about either XML or KML. I actually didn't know KML prior to us doing this exercise, but I did know XML, and it was sort of helpful in knowing how to do those conversions. The data we used is publicly available on the web through the NIH exporter site, exporter.nih.gov, and there's a ton of interesting information. I would highly encourage you to go there if you're ever interested in seeing information about the NIH and what we're funding. If you've ever gotten an NIH grant, probably in the past 10 years or so, your information is up there, FYI. And there's a lot of great information, and not just about NIH either. There's a couple other HHS Optives that do extramural funding as well as the VA, and that again, that's publicly available and you can download it. And some of the variables that we downloaded, and there's more available, but what we were interested in was funding information and project title, the PI, the institution, and the organization location. And street address is not available, and I'll touch on that in a future slide about how we dealt with that situation. And so actually in the tool itself, you can restrict your analysis. And the way we restricted our analysis was to only select NIH-funded projects, again, because we do report on some of the other HHS and the VA as well. And then we look specifically, again, our vocabulary, extramural grants. And parent projects, the larger NIH grants have sub-projects along with them, projects that are occurring at multi-centers, and we only wanted to look at the parents, so we weren't double counting anything. And then just for simplicity's sake, we limited it to fiscal year 2010 and also domestic projects, mostly so we could view it on a U.S. map, although NIH does, for reference, fund a limited amount of foreign projects, and you could do a map looking at the whole Earth in Google Earth. So this is the NIH, an example of a grant number, the anatomy of it. The two most important parts we're going to focus on is the activity code. You've probably heard of the term R01. That's a frequent grant referenced in the larger world. The activity code refers to the grant mechanism. So in R01, R stands for research. Another one that's heard frequently, a T32, T is for training. N doesn't really have that alphabetical correlation, but that stands for an NIH contract. And because we only wanted to look at grants, we excluded those. And Z stands for our intramural projects, and we wanted to exclude those as well. So if you were doing this, you would want to do probably that same exclusion. And then our two-letter institute code refers to the administering institute or center. And again, we have to limit those to our NIH institute codes only. And so this is just a quick listing. This is also available online of all the ones that are NIH specific. Again, here's just a quick screenshot of Exporter. This is what it looks like, exporter.nih.gov. I would encourage you to go visit there when you have a chance. So beyond the data limitations that we described, which we actually did in the Exporter tool, once we exported things, we needed to do some data cleaning, and this is what we did in SAS. We needed to correct for incorrect zip codes. If you've ever, Exporter actually downloads to Excel, and so if you've ever downloaded anything to Excel, you know that it truncates leading zeros, and we needed to remedy that for our zip code. And then we needed to correct for anything that was misspelled. Again, publicly available data, sometimes the issue is that you do get some errors, maybe not fully cleaned as much as we would like, although NIH does try and do a good job of cleaning the data before it gets to Exporter. We just wanted to make sure we didn't have one Cofumbia in the city of New York with many Columbia in the city of New York grant awards. And so we just did that cleaning and then created a unique identifier. Because street address is not available in Exporter, we geocoded an organization to the geographic center of the zip code. And then what we did after that was we created a style URL, which was basically going to be the icon on the actual map that would show. And so you can tailor that based on any other information you have. You could make all the icons in a red state red and all the ones in blue blue. But what we did was instead do something more relevant to our analysis, which is to use our organization award count and to make those icons different based on the number of awards an organization gets. And then, of course, SAS does not directly export KML files, so we needed to export an XML file to SAS. And this is a little bit of SAS code. If you're familiar with SAS, it's probably is not totally foreign to you. Which is what I just want to highlight here is that this is the coding that would sort of take place after you've done your cleaning. This is how you would transform variables and get it ready to export into XML. And then this is a visual example of the actual SAS data with required variable names. So we didn't choose the variable names at top. Those are what we need in order to load something into Google Earth. The description field, that's what's going to come up in a pop-up, and you can see a little bit of HTML there with the line break. The style URL, those are the different styles that we're going to have on the icons, coordinates, obviously, geographic. And then the name variable, you can see, wait, what most of those are missing. Do we have a problem? We don't have a problem. We tailored that specifically because that's what's going to show up on an actual map. And so we only wanted to show the institution names that had the top NIH funding, top 10 awards. And so we chose to keep most of those blank. And it'll be easier to see on the actual map. This is the XML file that gets exported. If you're familiar with XML, this probably looks familiar. If you're not, then it probably looks a little scary. But what's important is the previous slide, the XML and the KML, is some of the changes you would have to do. KML has a required heading in order to be able to upload it. And the big difference between KML and XML is that KML tags are case sensitive. And so, for instance, the place mark, can I move this mouse? There we go, the place mark right there. That comes out of XML in all uppercase, but we need to do proper case in order to get it into KML and into Google Earth. And there's a couple of those. And so we manually did them in WordPad. And there's actually, if you Google, there's cookbook instructions on all the different things you'd need to do to get from XML to KML, more in depth than we're doing right here. And then there's also some scripts you can download online as well that will do it for you. You might not be able to download them onto your federally restricted computer, but if you are working in a different environment, you might able to do more of that. So once we've got this KML all straight up, we can import it into Google Earth and finally get a map. So this is our resulting map. This map shows the NIH awardee institutions by number of awards received in fiscal year 2010. So there's 8 institutions on our map that received more than 1,000 awards in 2010, and those are depicted with our orange house icon. So again, the way that we did that was by using our style URL and then made those icons different, and then the way we got those names of those institutions on there was, again, that name field. And then this second map shows the NIH awardee institutions by amount of funding received in fiscal year 2010. And so again, we've got the dollar sign. Those are our top 8 funded institutions. And so as a starting place for analysis, we could look at the previous map and the current map and say, are there any differences? And in truth, there are some differences. If we look at Washington University in St. Louis, we see that it's here on this map, it's one of the top 8 funded institutions, but it's not one of the top 8 awarded institutions. What does that mean? It means it's getting more expensive awards. This is a starting place. You could do a lot more with this. And then here's our pop-up. What you could do if we had this map open in Google Earth was to click on any of these icons, any of the institutions we awarded in 2010, click on them, see where they're located, and see the number of awards and amount of funding. So UCLA made out pretty well in 2010. And you can also even get directions to and from there. So what did we learn? What did we learn through this analysis? Well, first of all, you need to evaluate and address any data quality problems in publicly available data sets. If you download it and think it's scrubbed and clean, it might be, but it might have some issues as well, which we found. And so for us, it was actually easy because we work with NIH data frequently to know the data quality problems. But as any data analyst knows, once you get your nose in the data, you need to figure out data quality problems. So just be aware that that's in publicly available data sets as well. You have to tailor your analysis strategy to your data that's available. We didn't have the street address, so we had to tailor that to what we had, which is the city and zip code. Now, looking at everything on entire U.S. map, our icons are basically more or less in the same place. Now, if we were doing something at a more micro level, we might have more issues with whether or not it was correct, and then have to think twice about whether we could realistically do a map at that level. And again, also just You need to have some level of programming expertise. The Google Earth features, I mean, first of all, it's free and easily downloaded, which is a major feature. And the interactive display with lots of information, clickability on that institutional icon, it's very impressive. But there are limitations to using Google Earth, which is that you can't really filter a lot on the particular attributes when you're in there. So you have to do a lot in the pre-processing stage, which means that you have to be more familiar with the programming language and the tools and a statistical analysis tool and do all your cleaning sort of beforehand, which maybe could be a place where Google Earth sort of moves in the future. And again, this is just the tools we used and the variables we took from Xporter are just an example of what's possible, and you could do lots of things with it. So thank you to some extra colleagues who really were helpful in this, and just some additional resources that you could find. And again, if you're interested in partnering with us, that middle email address is the email address to link to our office. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Do you think there's in any way to look at the impact on the community through funded projects?
So the question was, do we use this to look at the impact on communities through our funded projects? And the answer is, We could. We're just starting to be able to use these and really get familiar. I mean, this was sort of our training to get familiar with the tool and to be able to do more with it, but it's our hope to be able to do more portfolio analysis using mapping tools, and that would be a great way to do some. Thanks.
I know in the professional version of Google Earth, you can actually import Excel data. So I'm curious, so you went from Excel to SAS, did you try anything? We tried this on the NIH library, like a very, very small data set. We ran into a similar problem with the latitude and longitude.
Uh-huh.
Did you explore anything else before you tried SAS?
No, we didn't, and I think you bring up something really good. Oh, sorry. The question is, have we used Google Earth Professional, because there's additional capabilities to export directly from import directly from Excel into Google Earth, and the issue is that we wanted to try and do something as we assume someone in the public might do it, and to actually just download that directly and then say, you know, if I was just downloading regular Google Earth, how could I do that? And so I think a more sophisticated version might be what you're describing, and I think that would be a great sort of next step for us, but we were hoping to look at it from the public's perspective. Does that answer your question?
It did. I guess, well, I would be less sophisticated, so the staff part's here.
Okay.
And how much tweaking did you have to do in the placemarks once you actually got it into Google Earth? Did you have to massage the placemarks at all? Or everything seemed to fit and your descriptors popped up where they were supposed to and they looked the way they were supposed to?
I think a lot of it you do in the pre-processing stage. So, oh, sorry, the question was, how much massaging are you doing in Google Earth? And the more massaging you do outside of Google Earth, the less massaging you can do in Google Earth, and it's harder to massage in Google Earth. And so doing more sophisticated tools and making sure everything is correct in KML will allow you to do that better once you're actually in the tool. Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you. That's an excellent point. So we did have to go through iterations of looking at a map and saying, this is maybe incorrect. Do we need to go back and clean our data some more? Do we need to change our coding in XML or KML? Thank you.
I was just going to ask you what are the next steps for the NIH now? So now that I think you guys have hopefully sort of figured out this process, where are you guys going to take this from here?
Great. So
the
question is, what are the next steps for NIH? And actually, I have sort of something exciting to say, which I haven't done. So it's something good news for somebody else who's done a lot of work. Is that Reporter, which is right here, our report at .nih.gov. They're all linked. Report, Reporter, and Exporter are all sort of in the same interface, and you can access them all together. They are building this into what's publicly available on the web. So it's just sort of in the pilot phase still, but it's going to be out there so that we wouldn't even have to do any of these processes, or you wouldn't have to do any of these processes. You could go to Reporter and directly click and see these visualized. Say, I want to see everything that, you know, the National Institute of Mental Health has given out in a specific year, and we'll be able to spit that out for you directly. So that's the wave of the future, is not having to go through any of this process. but it was still a good exercise to go through. Do we have time for... One more question in the back. Yep.
I see award dates. Are you thinking about looking at trends over time?
Absolutely. I mean, so the question was, could we look at trends over time? And I think that's something that we could do, is, you know, like an interactive map where we looked over time to see if there's any geographic distribution changes, you know, or, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we could go in the future in terms of how we wanted to do that, and I think that trends over time are certainly an important way to go. Thank you. Any other questions? I think we're done.